Yeah, g'day, mate. You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
And I am joined in the booth by Rachel Brooking for the Brooking Report. How are you, Rachel?
I'm very good, thank you.
Oh, good. I'm carrying on, I guess, Zach's brilliant thought to have you come in semi-regularly.
I'm very happy to be here as a local member of Parliament for Dunedin. It's awesome.
Beautiful. I saw that you were at NanoFest on your Instagram. How was that?
It was great. So this is the science festival that has a bit of a break every second year and just goes mini, the Nano NanoFest. But it's so cool. They've got lots of interesting talks on. I went to one about art and science, which was a nice change in thought patterns for me rather than looking at legislation and having arguments, political arguments. But at the Wall Street Mall, they've got all these clever scientists from the university and the museum and other places, some great conservationists as well. They're set up doing little experiments that are really good for kids, but also 50-year-olds, it turns out. So I learned about helicopters. I got to see the mineral that people want to do seabed mining for.
Oh, yeah.
Had a good discussion about how coal is not a mineral. It's a rock. And all sorts of things. Plus, I got to test my bird knowledge.
Yeah, true. Did you succeed with your bird knowledge?
I was pretty good with my bird knowledge, but I made one mistake. I caught an endemic bird. I thought it was an introduced bird, but sorry about that.
My parents are especially harsh on me about birds and trees. And every time I'd be like, oh, what's that bird song? They're like, I can't believe that you don't know what that bird is. That's ridiculous.
So I might be a little bit like that with my family, but I do have the advantage of having a whole degree in ecology.
So. Yeah, exactly. I know you were on campus earlier this week. You were at Clubs Day, OUSA Clubs Day, and Ready One's Market Day. You were chatting to students about the big issues that are facing them. What was the report there? Was there anything that surprised you that they said?
No, I don't think there was anything that surprised me. We talked about the state of student housing and the healthy homes rules and whether healthy home standards and whether or not they were being met. That came up a good few times. Obviously, the fees free came up a good number of times, as well as just general interest in cost of living issues. And, you know, the students always come up with some other things as well that might have to do with their studies. So some good discussions about conservation as well.
Yeah, and on conservation, Conservation Amendment Bill submissions are closed. And you were very vocal about, you know, no. and that Labor also rejected it. And it faced a lot of public backlash to the point where it had some clarifications even of, oh, we're actually, it's not that extreme. People have kind of misunderstood the bill's intention. And indicated that the government was going to change positions on the provisions relating to land exchange and disposals. What's your views on the amendments to the amendment?
Yeah, well, we haven't seen it all yet. So if we start from the start, a third of New Zealand is conservation, public conservation land. And some of that land is national parks, and some of that land is what's called stewardship land and might not have high conservation values, but might have high conservation values. And what this government was doing with the bill was to say a number of things. One of those things was to make it much easier to dispose of 60% of that public conservation land. And so I asked the minister at Select Committee during our annual reviews whether or not he could give the committee any comfort about selling off 60% of public conservation land. And he said, well, I don't want to sell off great swathes of land, but bits and bobs. And then he started naming bits and bobs. And it was like, well, what about medium swathes of conservation land? And of course, this public conservation land, a lot of people have fought for its protection in the past, and people take it really seriously, the right to go tramping and walking in these areas. So it's an issue that affects many people who would be National Party voters as well.
Yeah.
So he was really cocky about it all and sort of blustery, if that's a word. And then obviously the Prime Minister and others got heard about it and decided, I mean, of course, it all went through cabinet before, so they already knew, decided that that was too controversial. And so that they said that they will remove those aspects of the bill that were going to widen up this disposal ability. However, what remains in the bill is still a total paradigm shift in the purpose section. And what is clause 6EA for anybody who's looking at it. And that says that on conservation land, you should be doing development, you know, where possible.
Yeah.
So that's a huge change from it being about conserving biodiversity and access for recreation and tourism. And of course, anything, the word development for this government means mining.
Yeah.
And that's how you have to read it. And that's, you know, incredibly troubling. So we would delete that. And also, the Conservation Act has a very strong treaty clause, the strongest that's around, and it says give effect to the principles of the treaty. And the courts have said that that means active protection. What this government has been doing is they're trying to take treaty clauses out of legislation and just diminish mana whenua rights and treaty rights generally across the board. So rather than touching Section 4, which is this treaty clause, they've added in a one below it, which they say is a helpful explainer, and basically downgrades active protection or give effect to consultation only. So that's another huge problem, and we would delete that also. There's some other aspects of the bill which is about changing up how plans and concessions and things are made for this, you know, a third of the country, and we're totally okay with a lot of those changes. There's some changes, though, that give the minister a whole lot more power, and we're worried about those changes. So so the Select Committee has now closed for submissions, and we'll hear those submissions, I guess, in a month or so. We'll start hearing them, but it won't be passed this term of Parliament.
Yeah. And as it stands, is it still, I mean, it's opening that legal framework, right, for development, whether it's big swaths or little swaths. So you can't, if that framework is there, if that legislation is there, it exists.
Yeah, if the purpose is changed to be this pro-development, then that impacts on all conservation land. So that's a real problem. You can already, in the Conservation Act as it is, unamended, you can already dispose of some land if there's been this big process and there's very low conservation values. So that will, those aspects will remain, and those are fairly sensible and not what the minister wanted to change into his medium-sized swathes of land, whatever that is.
Now, let's talk Dunedin, South Dunedin flood plan. You know, online, it's just a flurry of conversations and some very heated debates with residents. Can you give us any kind of insight or perspective here?
So my background in resource management, I'm very interested in climate adaptation. And it's something that we were progressing when we were in government as well. And it's really hard to talk about climate adaptation because people live in an area and they, and even if you've got all the science in the world that says at some point this land, you might not be able to live here, then that's a horrible thing to hear. And so you have to have conversations very carefully and very carefully talk about the timeframes and not necessarily be specific about various different properties, which this plan wasn't specific. So it shows some areas where you might need to not have housing in the future, but not specific properties. And when people have been flooded before, that's obviously very traumatic for them.
Yeah.
And you can understand why they'll be very upset. So it's always difficult, and it's always going to be difficult, but it's not going to go away.
Yeah.
And Dunedin City Council has been working really hard with the community to discuss different options and timeframes and do it quite gently. So it's really, it's not my electorate, most of South Dunedin, and so I won't comment on any of the specifics of it.
But, of course.
But it's really important that New Zealand as a whole can have these discussions about what the impacts of climate change are on existing properties.
Yeah.
It's really different for when you're talking about new development. You know, don't go and build right yeah. next to somewhere where there's going to be sea level rise. And we should, as politicians, central government, should have laws that are stricter, though,
yeah.
about stopping development in areas where we know there's going to be a problem in 10 or 20 years.
Mm.
And unfortunately, this government's gone a little bit in that direction, but not as far as they could. So we've got this. This issue is not specific to South Dunedin.
Yeah.
It's going to happen to a whole lot of New Zealand. And it's not just about sea level rise. It's also about... with climate change, we get more storm events. Mm. So that leads to more flooding and more wind events. So areas where people live at the moment, at some point in the future, and we don't know when necessarily, some places where houses are will have to move. So we need to be able to talk about that.
Yeah, and it's such a difficult conversation.
It's really difficult. And the government's just announced, or they've introduced an adaptation planning bill, but the really tricky issue I've certainly been talking about it for 6 years, and people have been talking about it for longer than I've been talking about it, and that is who would pay for a move.
Yeah.
And there's been lots of really good work done by the Environmental Defence Society and some really clever academics as well about, well, where you set thresholds. So if somebody could foresee that there was going to be a problem, that's different from somebody who's lived in a house like in South Dunedin for ages, who's always lived there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the flooding has come to them rather than them going to the flooding. Mm. So you can say, well, there's a difference there. But what about a really fancy house that's worth millions and millions of dollars? If someone was going to pay them out,
yeah.
should they pay out, should they cap the amount? And what should that amount be? And then you get this government has largely gone, oh, well, central government has no role almost. But then we know when there is an event, central government politicians can't just put their head in the sand and ignore a whole lot of people who've now got no house to be in.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. We know politicians are always going to respond to that.
Yeah.
So better to actually deal with it in a sensible way up front so people know how much they'll have to pay, how much the government's going to pay, where they're going to be relocated to. You know, all of these discussions, it's really important to have good planning for and some good frameworks, and it needs to be bipartisan.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be hard.
It is going to be so hard, but it's not even just New Zealand, it's across the world. You know, can't just put your head in the sand. There's no reversing climate change that's already occurred right now. There's no immediate stop to it. So the tricky conversation is, well, how do we as a nation plan for the effects when they come in? It's even with that heat wave in Europe, you know, that's, you've left a bunch of people with no air conditioning because they previously lived in places where they didn't need that extreme air conditioning, and now they do. And their governments are going to have to make provisions to make sure that people aren't dying of heat stroke. In New Zealand, seawater rise as well as other effects, you can't put your head in the sand.
That's right. That's totally right. And it is hard, and we should not get political about it.
Mm.
And unfortunately, it seems that there's some real politics happening here around it, rather than trying to all work together, which is a great shame.
Mm.
But also, we also need to do the other side of the coin and decarbonise.
Mm.
And most of that work and decarbonisation has stopped in New Zealand with the change in government. We had heaps of things going with our Climate Emergency Response Fund, and almost every single program was stopped by this government. And that is also a head in the sand, because whilst, you know, we get that argument all the time, oh, well, New Zealand doesn't produce that much climate pollution. We do per capita.
Yeah.
And if everybody had that attitude, then nothing would happen. And as a small nation, we need to work with other nations to encourage everybody around the world to decarbonise.
Mm.
And it's an opportunity as well. We've got our solar policy out.
Yeah.
And you can reduce your spending on electricity if you use solar and renewables. And so that's, you know, it's a win-win.
Yeah.
And there's heaps of win-wins out there that we can be looking for.
Mm. And on climate change and students, do you feel like, has there been any dip in students mentioning climate change, or has it just kept up with it? It's their number one issue probably after fees free.
It definitely is a big issue. And when I was at the market day, was that yesterday?
Day before.
Earlier this week, my days have all blurred together.
You're a busy one.
You know, when I was at market day, there were some people coming around with a billboard asking how stressed you were about climate change. Were you not at all bothered, or were you pooing your pants, I think was the phrase that they used, or very, very worried? And I think that also turns into an anxiety question as well. So it's a very, very big issue for students, and it's that mixture of both being concerned about climate change but also being very anxious about the world and what will happen with it as well.
And some of that comes from not seeing governments do anything big, like we were just talking about, or even having a very proactive attitude towards those changes.
Well, in some people in government, when I've been speaking about climate change issues, yell things at me, heckle, and they really sound like climate deniers even, which is very scary in New Zealand politics when we see climate-related weather events all of the time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have Shane Jones yelling about coal all the time, and the other government parties, you know, their obsession with fossil fuels, that they want to spend billions of dollars with the LNG terminal, that is a foreign fossil fuel that they want to import into New Zealand and keep our dependence on it, rather than changing to renewables, is, you know, it's just totally bonkers.
Mm. And let's talk about the other major student issue, which is fees free. It's on the mind of a lot of students, I'd say. Scrapped by the government, Labor hasn't committed necessarily to reinstating the policy. I think some students question the affordability of uni, especially when paired with the cost of accommodation and the cost of living crisis on top of that. Graduates, they're already deciding that it's worth taking on the student loan interest, to go overseas. Do you think there's a fear that students at the moment, they think that the path they've been promised through uni into the workforce doesn't exist, they're more likely to continue that brain drain and go, well, I might as well go overseas, like, my loan's big, you know?
Yeah. Look, Labor is totally focused on that issue of our talent, our New Zealand talent, going overseas and not just for an OE.
Yeah.
You know, going for an OE, totally great.
Yeah.
Come back, learn something, come back. We love that. But just going overseas, full stop. So we're very aware of that. We haven't released our tertiary policies yet. We were, of course, surprised, like students, that National that had campaigned on a fees free, but the switch from the first year to the third year would suddenly dump it at the budget.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to have dealt with any of the legitimate expectation that first year students would have had, and I guess second year students would have had to have that third year free, and people would have made decisions based on that. So that's terrible. And obviously we did have the policy in the past of that first year fees free, and before I was in politics and before COVID, it was also the idea was to extend that out because education's really important. And we want as many people to be educated as possible in the country, and that lifts us all up to get all the, you know, to start up those novel industries that we haven't thought of yet that are going to be the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's all really important, as is affordability generally for everybody in New Zealand, which is another thing that we're very focused on. And, you know, one element of that would be our public transport policy, which is capping fares to $10 a week in Dunedin, $20 in Auckland, Wellington and Christchurch. But also with education, and this is something Chris Hopkins was speaking about earlier in the week when he was on campus, is this with very changeable world that we've already been talking about, and one aspect is the need for people to have lifelong learning as well. So our our policy focus is also going to be on that lifelong learning and when people need to retrain.
Yeah.
And going sort of back into the fossil fuel discussion, that's really important that we always have just transitions for people who have worked in those industries, and so that they can make the best use of their skills.
Yeah.
And still be employed and have meaningful work. That's with the Labor Party. meaning that we're there for the workers. And we will always have that lens on any policy decisions.
Thanks so much for joining me, Rachel.
Thanks for having me, Lily.
Oh, good.
Thanks for keeping up with it.
No problem. It's been lovely to chat to you. Is there anything else you'd like to say before you leave us with your great Minwe recommendation here?
Oh, yes. I was asked the other day for, just on the spot, on camera, for my favourite New Zealand song, and this one popped out of my head. I'm not very good at favourites. I don't really have a favourite. This is what I tell my children all the time.
But, is it true, though?
Well, I also say it depends who's been most helpful. Yes, I hope everyone enjoys this, and welcome back to campus, and good luck for this semester.
Beautiful. Ka kite.
Ka kite anō.
Yeah, now, Siebs, that was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.